Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 234.
This week on the podcast, the only possible explanation for Saturday's DNC vote is that the Democrats don't like winning and never want to do it again.
And banning the paper of record is a great way to get yourself written out of the record.
Ted Cruz makes an ominous prediction at CPAC.
And we've got dispatches from the hashtag resistance recess.
Plus, we're one step closer to deporting second-generation immigrants, i.e. citizens, which maybe would at least allow us to deport Donald Trump.
And if Congress won't act, let's hope at least the witches can save us.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Also on social media.
Yeah, you could find... You could find us on social media yesterday.
Oh my God. You could find a tweet storm from yours truly on social media yesterday. I was not having this DNC vote result.
No.
I realized what, you know how we got trolled last week by all those Trump people because they saw us hashtag not my President's Day?
Yeah.
And they like lost their minds and just started posting like random nonsense on our page. They'd never even heard of us.
Right.
They kept telling us shit of like Hillary Clinton's not our president. And I was like, well, if you've been listening to this podcast, you haven't. She's definitely not ours. So like, I felt like I turned into one of them. I just like lost control of my like rational brain and just started like firing off angry tweets. And then started
Some
calling
of them
everyone
at Tom Perez.
A lot of them at Tom Perez. And then started calling everyone I knew to ask if this meant that I was going to leave the Democrats.
Right.
Still undecided on that count.
Well, I think people probably will, and I think that the party is going to be like, what? Why?
No, they're going to be like, those jerks don't get how it is.
Well, then bye.
Which is bye. Yeah, exactly. So if you hadn't guessed, Tom Perez won the DNC chair election.
Yep.
It was a very close vote. It went to a second ballot. The Ellison people were like audibly unpleased in the hall.
There were a lot of Ellison people like outside of the hall too.
Yes.
Like there were a lot of sort of like, they turned into protesters. Right. They weren't necessarily protesters when they went.
Partisans of a sort.
Yes.
That led to a lot of condescending lectures on all platforms from Democrats telling us that this isn't the time to be unified. Like fuck them.
Yeah.
If they want us to be unified, then choose someone that reaches out to the people that don't feel included.
Well, and I keep going back to like the fact that like it's not even so much that I ended up being more upset than I thought I was going to because I've been telling you for weeks that
you
I wasn't
like,
going
oh,
to
be fine.
To be
Either
upset
way, he's
he
progressive.
Won. But that's also because I sort of thought that Ellison was going to win. But also, I feel like the thing that still makes me more mad about this whole situation is not that he won. It's that he was in the fucking thing to begin with.
Yes.
Like, because when, you know, Ellison said that he was going to run, like, weeks after the election in November, you had all people from left-wing progressives, like Bernie Sanders, who sort of was really touting him for this, to the Chuck Schumers of the world, who were really, like, all in on this. And it sort of, like, made us think to ourselves, well, maybe we got it.
Yeah.
And then months later, like literally months later, like in like the late December, it might have even been January, I can't remember. Lo and behold, here comes the Obama labor secretary. And it's like, guys,
if he is as progressive as I thought he was before I got mad at him, he was used right now. He was just used.
Because yes, he totally was.
The establishment wing of the party panicked because an insurgent progressive wing was looking like, oh, wait, we actually know how to win elections and you guys keep fucking it up because we've lost every fucking state house in the country and we can't win a majority anywhere. And then the establishment wing was sort of like, wait, we need a guy who has progressive credentials, but we'll do our shit. We'll work with our system, which includes not re-upping the ban on corporate money that W. Wasserman Schultz tore down so Hillary Clinton could raise lots of corporate money.
Yeah, the whole party voted that down, which is, I can't comprehend. But
well, they were trying to make it sound like, oh, they won't be able to bundle from activists and shit like that. And it was like, first of all, Obama was the one who instituted that policy. Like, and he raised a shit ton of money from everyone. So I feel like that can't have been it.
Right.
But also, I feel like symbolically, the sort of what we learned in this election was that an invigorated voting base doesn't need this, and that this does more damage to their involvement than the money buys you. It just doesn't buy you the votes it's supposed to buy you, with these kinds of voters.
No.
In any case, Perez's first act was to appoint Keith Ellison as deputy chair. And I have two thoughts about this that are contradictory.
Sure.
I'm going to share both of them. One is I think that's an attempt to make us complicit in whatever losing we're about to continue to do. Perez is one of those Dems who won't do any internal reflection on why we lost this presidential race. He keeps just being like, Russia, Russia, Russia. But the thing is, Russia's here now.
Yeah.
Russia just won us a presidential race. They're the president now. So there is going to be Russia interference in every race that they now run.
Yeah.
And if we can't look inside ourselves and be like, actually, Russia backed the most unlikely dark horse candidate in the history of the universe.
Yeah.
Like, why couldn't we beat a lunatic?
Yeah.
And you can't reflect on yourself that maybe you shared some of the blame for that. Yeah. Then you are part of the problem.
I did hear an interview with him on CNN.
Did he finally address this?
He did. Well, the question was framed in a weird way where basically like they asked him if he was willing to blame Hillary Clinton for her loss. And he certainly did not do that. But he did sort of like pretty bluntly say that like we need to learn lessons from this and we have to do a better job. And then sort of like listed the litany of
like
things
real
that
things
we have
that
to do
just
a better
like
job about. And like didn't have anything to do with Russia and like talked specifically about like making sure that we are the party that like reaches out to millennials and like make sure that we are the, I mean, he said sort of like what I found to be like mostly
the right talking points.
Yes.
And then, well, and cause my other thought of this, which is contradictory, which is that he did at least do the one thing that Clinton should have done.
Yes.
He reached out to the progressive wing of the party immediately. Yeah. And that was, I mean, I think that we should have been in a position to reach out to them because I think that we showed that they're not worth trusting with this important responsibility. Yeah. And I'm angry that he, even if he's now addressing it, I'm angry that he spent all of this time denying that Hillary Clinton had any culpability in what happened in 2016. Yeah. And I want to see, I have an idea that I'm going to tell you guys in a second about how we can address that.
I like
too. But I feel like at least he understood that this is, that it's a coalition that he has to cooperate with.
Right.
I just like, I don't want to become complicit in what's going to happen now.
Right.
Which is that new Democrat, unqualified candidates who just are inevitable because big money is backing them are going to be the candidates that this party chooses to run in races where you're where a strong platform would have done it and a weak one will not.
Yeah. I am sort of like, and the reason that I always thought that, that I would be okay with him winning is because I always did sort of feel like he was a person who kind of like mostly got it.
Right.
I was just like, I think that it just like ended up making me more mad than I thought it was going to be just because like I didn't like, it shouldn't have had to have been that way. I guess I am just sort of like more of a like wishing like that this was not the scenario that we had put ourselves in like with an option to elect Tom Perez for this.
Well,
but like I really still truly don't think that he's gonna screw it up. I
have lost all hope, and I'll tell you why I've lost
you
all
don't
hope.
Have
I
mean, to hope.
I literally don't have hope, and this is the first time that I have not had hope because I've been so excited to see all of this activism.
Yeah. There's a thing that gives me hope that we're gonna get to actually later in the podcast,
right?
And I will tell you why it gives me hope, but we'll get that later.
Yes, but the reason that I don't have hope is because I think it's clear what wing of the party was using him in what way to make this happen. I think that if we really just wanted a progressive person to lead the party, then we would have just elected Keith Ellison. If they understood that that was what was the missing ingredient in terms of how they were doing outreach and how they were messaging prior to this, then we didn't need this option. And because we had this option and because this option came from the right wing of the party, there is no room for this to be the best option.
Right.
And it means that we are going to continue to stick to these regressive ideas. And we're going to continue to stick with the corporate money and we're going to continue to stick
that
with all the
things. That almost makes me more mad, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I mean,
honest.
It makes it literally makes me more mad. Yeah. I think collectively those two things painted a picture of something that is sort of above, it's beyond what Tom Perez's actual role is and what his background is.
Yes.
It's about him being used by a party that didn't want to change.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was the whole party that voted for that corporate money ban. I mean, it was the whole party that voted for him, too.
See, another thing about these DNC votes is you can't find out who's voting in them. You can't figure out how to contact them. My mom tried to figure out who the delegates were from New York.
For New York.
She couldn't find it out. Like super delegate nonsense. This is like secret votes from party officials to sort of keep their own power structure in place.
Yeah.
And I think that if they really wanted to keep their own power structure in place, they wouldn't, you know, threaten us, like essentially, like leave us with a threat to form another party.
To keep their own power structure in place, they have
need voters.
I was going to say, they need voters. They have to have a party to keep
exactly
a structure in place.
I mean, even Robert Reich wrote something that was essentially like, if they can't figure out how to write this we're looking at another party forming. Yeah. I'm not interested in joining the Greens full time. I would like to join a party that is more sort of like a social democratic party specifically. Sure. But if that party presented itself to me in a credible form where other people were in it, I would abandon ship so fast, because the platform that these Democrats are interested in, even with a symbolic Tom Perez head, is fucking moderate Republicanism. It has been for years. It was time to move away from that. And I don't see any effort to learn that didn't turn out to be a great strategy for them.
I agree.
Here's my action suggestion for everyone. I think that we, as a group, as a community, as a people, need to demand that his first action as DNC chair is to do an honest postmortem publicly about what happened in 2016.
Yep.
That is not just Russia. And that in that, that one of the things they can use Keith Ellison for in his role as deputy chair is to oversee this postmortem.
Yep.
Because it is really vital that establishment Democrats have an honest accounting of what went wrong here.
It's important
not
to do this.
Rince Priebus style, where they're going to have a clown car next time too. Like, in a true sense, where they find out where their voters were, where they weren't, what happened, even with the leaks, why the leaks resonated with people.
Yeah.
What they need to do to protect themselves from leaks resonating with people in the future, because that shouldn't have happened in the first place. There shouldn't have been those leaks to resonate, and it shouldn't have been so easy to pull people apart on the basis of, you know, petty politics and things. Like, I think that I don't know that the establishment Democrats truly understand how hopeless a lot of the left feels.
I don't think they do.
And I think that because of that, they've been really patronizing and condescending. They're continuing to be. They're being threatening. More threatening than Trump voters a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I've been experiencing a lot of this vote shaming recently. But I mean, the sort of threatening edge to that, the idea that by opting out of the system, I'm to blame, but they're not to blame for running a stupid campaign.
I know. I
think that they need to do an honest accounting of where their voters are. Yeah. And a lot of their voters
are leaving. And
hopeless.
I don't think, and I
hopeless.
Don't, hopeless and near leaving. I don't, I don't think they understand how many people. I see this on my social media all the time. I mean, well, first off, I know people who have already, I already,
right,
left.
Right,
I have no party preference.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think they understand that yet. And they need to.
Yeah, I think that also they need to acknowledge that there were different strategies at play here, and that one of the strategy that they sought to discredit, where you actually just like say what your goal is, even if it's unpopular, and hope that, you know, like the strategy of straight talk has to be something that they have to understand why it works and how they can incorporate it.
Yeah.
You know, and they have to figure out where the line is with these corporate donations and these sort of double talk conversations, because the line needs to be much farther from the right than it currently is.
Totally.
They need a candidate who can get up and say, no, I'm against fracking. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
No questions asked.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. So in any case, that was a very disappointing thing that happened this week. And I'm so tired already. I don't need...
I know.
I think that's why...
You didn't need to spend Saturday being angry about
that.
No.
To angry tweet all of Saturday?
No.
But honestly, tweet at him that he should do an election postmortem.
Yeah.
I want to see the Democrats face what happened in a truthful way, not just blame each other for what happened.
Of
course, there are reasons that unfair things happen. That, you know, of course, that's true. I just, like, I don't see why, when you're actually running against, like, a ridiculous person, that should have been enough. And they need to know why that wasn't enough.
I'm with you.
In any case, in Trumpland news.
Oh, boy.
They got real exciting this week. On Friday, they banned like half of the credible press from their press conference.
Yeah. They had a gaggle.
They had a gaggle.
Yes.
Not a gaggle of gays. Not a gaggle of geese.
Mm-mm.
Gaggle is most commonly used in reference to gays in West Hollywood, I feel like. And in nature, geese. In Washington, it's used to talk about reporters.
Yes.
Which is less funny. But they they canceled their major press conference.
Right.
They then did a gaggle that did not include the Times, the New York Times, CNN, Politico, BuzzFeed, and most foreign press.
Right.
It included The Pool, but then they handpicked other media outlets to include, and those included Breitbart, The Washington Times, and One American News Network, which is a fake news network, basically.
Yeah. And Time and the AP boycotted.
Right. Time and AP boycotted because, and actually, Fox did not boycott, but several Fox hosts got very incensed about this because the Obama administration had tried to ban Fox at one point, and major news organizations stood up for them.
Yeah, they did.
And they all boycotted. Exactly,
yeah, and Brett Baier sent a tweet, basically was like, you know, CNN or MSNBC or whoever it was, like, stuck up for us.
Yeah.
And also Shep Smith, like, really gave a strong denunciation of this on air. I watched it and I was sort of like,
Honestly, Fox News has even less credibility if they're being handpicked with the Washington Times and Breitbart and not included in the New York Times.
Fox News sort of like has to, for them to sort of like carry on like they do, has to sort of like continue to be treated and be thought of by people as a part of the like actual press, even though I would contend that they are not.
No, but I would contend that MSNBC is not too.
Right. But it makes sense for them to be doing this, even though it shocked me that they did it. Like, I still get it.
No, I this is what all of these pseudo credible press organizations don't need.
No.
You know, the Washington Times and Breitbart don't give a shit.
No.
But Fox News and MSNBC, you know, any sort of like slight, like a slanted but medium credible news network that sometimes reports actual news, they need to be included in things that have the Times and CNN in order to look like they're real people.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, there's also been like a ton of leaks from inside the White House claiming that White House staff are being required to call up outlets doing critical coverage and try to convince them to report otherwise.
I mean,
there was the FBI came out this week. Comey's FBI came out and said that they denied a request to plant stories claiming that this Russia stuff isn't that important.
I mean,
Trump at his CPAC speech, which we're going to talk about CPAC in a second, went on like a long tangent about how you shouldn't be allowed to have anonymous sources anymore.
Right.
But that's because anonymous source, he's not providing any official sources and anonymous sources are leaking
that's
up a storm
leaking.
All
he's
over
trying
his
to
White
stop,
House.
That's how he's going to try and stop the leaks.
Yeah.
And he did say what was terrifying about that speech was because he again called the press the enemy of the state because he had tweeted that and then took that tweet down and sort of like got taken to task for it by everyone. But he really went all in on
he's
it.
He's like a little mini dictator.
And then he also said, we're going to do something about it. So I think everybody is sort of like on edge about like what that could possibly mean. But you know this is a thing that I have been telling, because a few people have been like, holy cow, he like did that with the press this week. And like, this is a thing that I dare him to do.
The press, go for it.
Attempt to pass a law that says you have to name your sources in the newspaper. I mean, like, because that's just like, that will lead to, I mean, I feel like there's 10 things now that could lead to his demise, but like that is at the top of the list.
Don't,
like, you can't.
I feel that, like this
that's
is
a non-starter.
Like, don't poke the bear that could eventually get your tax returns. That could, like, don't poke them into really inciting something.
Yeah, it's sort of like it's stupid,
a very dumb strategy.
It's stupid in a way that having a war with the intelligence community is stupid. You know what I mean? Like, just like, don't, like, why bother?
Why poke the bear?
Yeah.
You can get up to all sorts of shenanigans even while they're reporting this. You got elected president without anyone thinking you were a credible human being.
Right.
Like,
much, by the way, to the thanks of the media.
Like, don't start a war with our information source. And I get that they want a war on facts themselves.
Right, that's
but, like,
what it is. Yeah.
This is so interesting, though, because this is not like a sort of like one press organization, official press state.
Well, right.
This is also, and this is the first time I think that a country with a history of freedom of the press like this is trying to attempt this openly in the social media age.
Yeah. Right.
Because that, you know, there's a lot of people who are managed to get information without major media at this point.
Totally.
There's reporters who don't publish stories in the newspaper, but tweet stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I just, you know, even during the dark ages of time, people were gossiping behind the backs of their leaders. Like,
exactly.
I just, like, don't start a war with where you have 3 million fewer people than the other guy.
Yeah.
Who, you know, are all thirsty for facts. It just seems silly.
Yeah.
In just like a side note before we talk about CPAC, Kellyanne Conway's been yanked from the TV circuit finally.
She had sort of like been yanked from specific shows by
the specific shows themselves.
But now apparently we have found out that the White House doesn't want her out there anymore.
Well, she got on TV saying that Michael Flynn had the full confidence of Donald Trump right before
like
he was fired.
Before he got fired.
And got fired for being, quote, off message, basically. I mean, she got taken out of the media circuit. I think they have had so much less drama this week, even though they've been up to so many more shenanigans.
Right.
I feel like like, keep her out of it.
Right?
She was causing them more trouble than anyone.
She had a real bad week last week. So.
Well, yeah.
I mean.
But she'd had a real bad week every week. She coined alternative facts. They're being mocked endlessly about that. Yeah. Like, she
Bowling
pitched,
Green Massacre.
She coined the Bowling Green Massacre. Like, these are things that they didn't need to have happen.
Right.
And even though they were distracting, there's plenty of he can think of distracting things in his sleep.
Right.
He's literally doing that in the middle of the night.
Right.
Like, they don't need Kellyanne Conway.
No, they certainly don't. So we already mentioned Trump's speech at CPAC. We're going to mention just a few other things. I feel like CPAC maybe wasn't, like, as insane as I have as I wanted it to be.
The actual government was there.
Well, that's true. Yes.
And, like, what's crazy anymore?
Yeah, well, maybe that's what it was. Yeah.
It was as crazy as it always is. It's just that these people talk to us all day long now.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's some updates. Here's a few things to know, though. One is, why is it so funny that it was held at the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center?
Because it is.
Like, why don't they get irony?
Right? I know. Also, why wasn't it Mar-a-Lago?
Right? If we're going to, let's
commit. He could have paid his own, you know.
His own speaking fees.
Well, yeah.
No, he could have.
He could have paid the own rental.
Paid his own rental fees, exactly.
The location fee to his own company. Yeah, exactly.
Steve Bannon basically admitted that the goal of the Trump administration is to ruin the government.
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of like talking about like why they basically nominated all of these people who sort of like are like notably against the agencies that they have been nominated to lead. And he was basically like, well, because like
we want to get rid of these agencies
because we want the government to basically go away.
Yeah.
Like we're trying to like tear down institutions was what he said. Yeah. I mean, which is sort of like. Yeesh. Yeah, exactly.
Ted Cruz ominously said that there was going to be another Supreme Court vacancy this year, which is, we're wondering
what
he has the inside track on.
Who he's poisoning later in the
exactly.
summer.
Like, so that's a little concerning.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I mean, obviously. She's she's the enemy number one of those idiots.
Yeah.
Richard Spencer, our face-punching
white nationalist.
Or he didn't punch faces. He got punched.
Yes.
Was there and... Just after saying, I feel very welcome here, nobody's punching me yet, got kicked out of the event.
Yeah. Although, you know what? I think that the only reason that he got kicked out of that event was because he was sort of like having, like made it, he had a very public presence there.
Yeah.
Which obviously was like, he attempted to do that because like he's just like basically like trying to get in front of any camera.
For white nationalism.
But he was officially credentialed at the event. So it's not as if CPAC was like, shocked to find out that he was there.
No,
it was only that he basically like held court in the lobby with every news agency, like, and then like 45 minutes later, they were like, you know what? Why don't you check
this
up on
not a
here?
Great? Yeah,
exactly.
He was offered a refund though. They didn't just kick him
that's
out.
Nice.
Yeah, that's real nice.
Yeah,
he deserves a refund. Alexandra Petri of the Washington Post, I think, described the event in total best. CPAC can be defined as the subset of people who will not punch Richard Spencer, but will evict him and will then applaud Steve Bannon for making a similar case from the stage several octaves higher in register in a register only audible to dogs.
Okay, the other thing that was funny that happened at this that like I had forgotten about until right now was that Kellyanne Conway was there.
Yes.
And she made some comment about like how she didn't know if she could consider herself a feminist because like today's feminists are just like pro abortion and blah 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 whatever. And then I don't know if you have been following this, but I don't think we've talked about it on the podcast. But like Merriam-Webster has been
trolling the shit
out of everybody. Yeah. Like they've like their words of the day have like often been like the day before the inauguration. The word of the day was I don't even remember what it was, but it was basically the definition was like the downfall of civilization.
Right.
And like they've been like doing shit like that all the time. And they like tweeted out a link of Kellyanne Conway talking about what feminism was with like the definition of
feminism.
The actual definition of what feminism was. I'm just like Merriam-Webster on
the
Twitter
dictionary.
Is like crushing it right now, by the way. So if you're not following Merriam-Webster on Twitter, get on that because it's hilarious. And God bless them.
It's funny who's risen to the challenge
right?
here.
I know.
Like really funny. Like Pete D'Souza, Obama's old
photographer's
been trolling them.
Totally,
like,
yeah,
there's been some great like sudden trolling going on that's been really inspired.
Yeah.
In any case, here are some updates from hashtag Resistance Recess.
Yeah.
Because that was this week
good.
And it was good.
We promised it last week
and it,
here they
it
are
delivered.
Because it delivered. Yeah.
There were a lot of town halls that the ones that were actually held were
many
raucous.
Skipped out. Yeah.
A lot of skipped out.
Iowa come on,
came through.
Come through.
Joni Ernst tried to plan a veterans roundtable that no one would show up to.
Yeah.
It's in a town called
Maquoketa.
I was not going to try to say that myself, which is a tiny town in eastern Iowa. It was meant
Yeah, the population is like 1,000.
Right. It was, the whole thing was designed to make sure resistors didn't show up. You know, it was a narrow topic. It was a rural part of Iowa. It was a public building with limited space.
The resistors...
They found it.
Put Maquoketa into their GPS.
It just drove the 2 hours it took to get there.
Right. Like, she didn't have it, like, in an actual secret location. That's what she should have done,
obviously. I know. Well, that's what a lot of them are doing.
Right.
Yeah, all the people who are like, I've been having public meetings, and it's like, no, you've been having private meetings. The difference between public and private is, like, an actual thing.
Yeah.
In any case, she got there. Room was full.
Yeah.
As was an atrium and an adjacent hallway.
There were almost as many people there as are in the town.
As are in Iowa.
Yeah.
People came from all over because apparently she hasn't held any public events in any of Iowa's 50 most populous cities. I didn't even know Iowa had 50 cities. I'm shocked to learn that. They can't be that popular.
I was just about to say, like, the biggest city we have is Des Moines, and it's like 200,000 people.
Like, the bar whatever here number is very
so whatever
low.
Number 50 is has She's to probably still be outweighed by number
town
of town
halls in towns of 50 people, basically, and things like that. But she's not going into any blue zones.
No.
She ignored most of the protests. She mostly called on veterans. But there was a question about Obamacare that abruptly did not go well. And then they ended the event really abruptly with a huge line of people still waiting to ask questions.
Yeah.
She also said she's in the early stages of a 99-county tour across Iowa, which Chuck Grassley is also claiming that he's doing.
Yeah.
But apparently a lot of these tour dates, a lot of the counties they've checked off have
tour
been
dates.
Like,
I love that.
Yeah, it's been like factory tours, like private events that, she hasn't held, like we said, held any recent events in any of the 50 most populous cities.
Right.
So, you know, she's not actually seeing the 99 counties of Iowa.
She's not.
But she, during this Obamacare question, she tried to pivot into the benefits of HSAs and just got like drowned out by booths, which is genius. And then she also got shit from the crowd 'cause she refused to say anything definitive about investigating Russia.
Right.
Like, it was all like, yeah, Russia's bad and blah, blah, blah. Everyone was like, what are we going to do about it? And she wouldn't say.
Yeah.
Chuck Grassley had a video go viral at his town hall because there was an Afghan man who had worked as a translator with U.S. forces and was injured in the process in Iowa Falls, who asked for help staying in the U.S. And he was sort of like, what am I supposed to do with Trump's immigration executive order? And he got huge cheers in the room. Chuck Grassley said nothing of any help. But the video like was circulated all over the internet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mitch McConnell got into a weird interaction with a woman at a town hall.
This was hilarious because this video is, first off, like, he has, like, while this woman is talking to him, she's basically, like, talking about, she sort of, like, goes on a pretty lengthy rant, but it was, like, it was pretty coherent. I mean,
when it's
she's
also
talking
interesting
about, because she was basically talking about, like, what all of these, she was like, the coal jobs are going away, we know they're not coming back,
right.
All of these miners are
they're out of work,
sick, and
they're
on food stamps because they don't have jobs, and, like, you're trying to take their health care away, you're trying to cut social services, like, What is your fucking plan? And the whole time that she's talking to him, and she goes on for a while, he has, like, the most uncomfortable...
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of videos where, like, you can look and, like, they've added music and then, like, a push-in on his face because he's, like, he's trying to, like, smile at her, but he's also, like, trying not to actually shit himself.
Right.
So, I mean, and he already looks weird anyway.
Well, and she phrased it really, like, interestingly because she's going on about how there's too many people on food stamps. And so you think for a second that she's about to angle in on getting rid of all these... people leeching off the system.
Right.
And then she kind of pivots to being like, it's because no one has fucking jobs and the jobs aren't coming back and they're sick and they're poor and what are you going to do for them?
And I don't know if this woman is a Republican or a Democrat. But
she's a genius.
But she's
a certified genius.
But what I would like to say is that, like, let's say that she is a Republican because she very
easily... She phrased it in a way that made it feel like
she was. She is a person who might vote for a Democrat.
Yes, exactly.
And like,
she doesn't want to see her community on food stamps.
Right.
Nobody wants to see any community on food stamps. But
right.
she wants them to be not sick and have jobs.
But she is also the type of person that we have sort of like collectively like written off. And I just wanted to point that out. It has nothing to do with the story. But I just
she did end her comment with, if you can answer any of that, I'll sit down and shut up like Elizabeth Warren. So I wonder.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because the way she phrased it was very much designed to sort of make his Republican ears perk.
Yeah.
And then she kind of like went in for the kill and he replied, I hope you feel better now.
Yes.
And she said,
poor lady.
Yeah.
I hope you know.
Now
like,
that you've ranted.
Crazy lady.
And she said, I do. And then he goes, anybody understand anything I have to say up here for once?
Ugh,
fuck you.
Get buzz off.
First of all, you're being videotaped. And she made a great point.
Well, so many of these town halls had signs up that you couldn't videotape
anything.
Did you see that?
And yet, so many of them wound up on CNN. It's amazing.
I know.
Like, did you see that one where, I think it was like Tom Cotton or somebody, where somebody asked how many people in this room had been benefited
and the whole room stands up.
And the whole room stood up. Genius. It was amazing. Yeah. Marsha Blackburn also had some issues with some protesters in a meeting at in Fairview, Tennessee. It was pre-screened people. It was only 130 people. Yeah. They were required to be residents of the city of Fairview, which has like seven people in it total. And things are kind of boring and whatever for a while. And then she opened the floor to questions and the whole place went nuts.
Yeah.
Like, she tried to say, she tried to deny that Steve Bannon was appointed to the NSC.
Well, maybe she doesn't
and
know.
And the guy who asked the question was like, it was all over the news.
Right. If there's one thing I know about Marsha Blackburn, it's that
she doesn't know much.
It's that she is a real life idiot.
Yeah. No, like, that's
there
a true
are,
story.
There are Republican members of Congress who sort of like are smart,
are
but
thinking
also
people,
evil.
But evil. Yeah.
Marsha Blackburn
not
is
one of them.
Dumb as hair. Yeah. I mean, she's an idiot.
She's a dumb person.
So she might not have known this.
She got booed defending Betsy DeVos and Scott Pruitt. At another point, she said, we're all for clean air, clean water, and want to have a healthy environment. Next question. And somebody yelled, you voted against that just this month. She was asked whether it was fair to prioritize refugees who are Christians, and she replied, I know that Christians have seen incredible persecution and got booed out of, got booed down. And then there was a protest outside as well, like another 150.
There were a lot of like outside protests for people who couldn't get into town.
Another 150 people. And then there was also Dave Bratt from Pennsylvania. He's the guy who beat Eric Cantor for that seat.
He
got booed and there were protesters as well. He would only take questions on pre-written note cards that were chosen by a local mayor. Mark Sanford and Tim Scott held a joint town hall that went on for hours because it was way overcrowded. They were booed and interrupted constantly. People were holding up signs that said disagree on them.
Yeah.
And they had to break the event into two parts because so many people showed up. Yeah. Steve Womack of Arkansas faced a ton of angry voters, and that district Trump won by 62% of the vote.
Wow.
Jim Jordan from Ohio faced 100 demonstrators while he was just trying to visit Warren G. Harding's home on Monday. He was just like on a historical tour. Scott Taylor from Virginia had constituents pre-write questions, and an aide selected them.
Yeah.
But they were then allowed to ask the questions into a microphone, but they wouldn't let anyone actually like hold the microphone themselves so that you couldn't hijack it. And then at that one, after people were dismissing the town hall attendees as paid protesters, you probably heard that all week, a bunch of people wore name tags with their zip codes at that event to prove that they were local. There was another picture of people, I think in Colorado, holding up their state IDs when that was suggested. And then there were the people who didn't bother having
just
a
skipped town
hall. Out. Yeah. Yep. Daryl Issa here in California skipped a town hall, and protesters made Where's Waldo cutouts, cutouts of his face, images, and he also did actually go meet with some protesters outside of his office, because there were protests outside of his house, outside of his offices. He got protested everywhere.
Yeah.
And then he went on Bill Maher, oddly. Couldn't make it to a town hall to see his constituents, but he could visit his celebrity friends. Bill Maher called him out for missing the town hall.
Yeah.
But also, he called for Congress to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate Trump's ties to Russia, saying Jeff Sessions wasn't an appropriate
person
to investigate
it. You know, Daryl Issa has been in Congress for a long time.
Yeah.
And he is we talked about this back in November, but California is a state that is moving further to the left. A lot of places voted for Democrats in places that they never had. Daryl Issa is like enemy number one here, because he actually only won by like 2%.
Yeah.
And I think this sort of Trump congressional or the appointing a special prosecutor, I think is self-preservation, but who fucking cares?
No,
I mean,
whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. But also go to a town hall, Daryl.
Right. Go to your town hall. And then there were a ton of senators who didn't schedule town halls, so people scheduled them for them.
Yeah, I love that.
Cory Gardner in Colorado, protesters planned an in absentia town hall because he didn't schedule any public forums.
Yep.
He was someone who actually, he had dismissed all the phone calls he was getting as coming from out-of-state paid protesters, but he's also refusing to have town halls, so he's not hearing from anyone, apparently. Georgia's Dave Perdue, they had a protest outside of his office on Tuesday that had two empty chairs because neither him nor Johnny Isaacson, who's also the other Georgia senator, have been holding town halls. Barbara Comstock's district in Virginia, they rented out a space for a town hall, hoping to drive media coverage so she'd show up.
Yep.
Bob Goodlatte in Virginia hasn't held a town hall since 2013, so his constituents have been putting up missing posters all over the place.
Love that.
Richard Burr, on Saturday, Together We Will, which is like a progressive organization, took out a quarter page lost and found ad in the News and Observer newspaper in Raleigh. It said lost United States Senator. He may respond to the title Senator Richard Burr, though his constituents have been unable to verify whether he is still whether that is still the case, as they've been unable to contact him in recent weeks. And then the same day, someone chalked a message on the parking lot of his office saying Senator Burr, time to town hall.
Time to town hall. I like that.
North Carolina, Tom Tillis refused to take part in town hall. So he was represented by an empty chair at a town hall that his constituents held.
So good.
And then, so Indivisible and Move On held a, and Working Families Party, I think, held a phone call on Saturday that had more than 40,000 people on the line to learn how to get the attention of the congressional representatives. Yeah. Like, this use of Tea Party tactics, but by thousands instead of you know, tens, is really interesting to watch. Yeah. Because there are still Trumpers who are attempting the Tea Party style tactics. They're attempting to, you know, intimidate people at protests. They're attempting to claim like you're all paid protesters or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is hard to say that when thousands of people come out being like, no. Like, this is just visually an interesting thing to watch. Because I think at a certain point, just because, you know, it, as a matter of self-preservation in their district, you know, we're going to talk in a second about how this translates to action at the state level.
Yeah.
This is bad news. If you have people in your safe Trump district who are willing to come out in those kind of numbers and be that angry with you, like, those are people who know they live in a Republican district.
Right.
They've been dealing with it for years.
They now feel like they have
the people
voice.
Of Iowa voted for Joni Ernst.
Of course, yes.
With their votes, you know? Like, they used their votes to vote for Joni Ernst.
Yeah.
They, rural eastern Iowa did not, was not trying to vote for a Democrat.
No.
And yet, people are showing up to be like, we voted for a Republican, not an authoritarian idiot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
In any case, in sad news.
I know. Yeah. Quick update here. Quick update on the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah, because that was, there was a story this week that isn't related to any other story, but we felt like we should cover it before we get on to the less important news. The Army Corps of Engineers closed one of the protest camps, and everything basically got burned by protesters.
Yeah.
And it was a real grisly scene.
Yeah, it wasn't.
But
wasn't a good look.
11 people were arrested. They basically, anyone who remained after the sort of deadline was arrested on trespassing charges. It took like 200 officers, and they just like cleared everything out. It was the visuals of it are unpleasant.
Yeah, and it's unpleasant that we're gonna have a pipeline through there.
Yes, that too. that also.
Yikes.
So that's an update on how Dakota Access Pipeline never fucking goes away.
Ugh.
Yeah. Just stop it. I'm so bored of this one because it's
we're gonna have it because Trump loves pipelines.
Pipelines, yeah.
And you know, Obama had finally sort of like under certain pressure. Had said that they weren't going to.
Because he loved pipelines, too.
He liked pipelines, too.
Hillary Clinton loves a pipeline herself. I mean, they're all pipeline lovers.
Yeah.
But only one of them cares about public pressure because only one of them wins with the majority of the votes.
Yeah.
That's not Trump.
Yeah.
In any case, speaking of Trump.
Yeah.
It's hard not to.
Oh, boy.
DHS issued a guidance memo to enact two Trump executive orders that are sort of meant to replace the immigration plan that he initially enacted and also extend it to get rid of undocumented people entirely, it sort of sounds like.
And it's not great, guys.
It's not great. Well, what's a sort of break with precedent here is it gave agents like huge latitude to deport and also just like arrest and detain undocumented immigrants, but it also gives them latitude to arrest legal immigrants with criminal records. And a criminal record in this circumstance is a very low bar.
Yes, it is.
You know, we're not talking about criminal records like they murdered somebody.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. What has been interesting to hear people on the right talk about this recently is because that what they have always said is that the people who are like, you know, who have felony offenses or who have, you know, like, you know, who are like hardened criminals, like those are going to be
gang
like
members,
that, right?
Murderers.
They have always said that those are going to be the people who are like going to get priority.
Yeah.
And so like in being asked about this now in regards to just like just having sort of like a criminal record.
Right.
Like there are now
there's a lot of questions about what constitutes a criminal record,
what that is. And you're hearing a lot of them try and do the, you know, sort of two step around this and be like, well, they've been arrested, so and they're criminals, and it's sort of like, but you know, like I know
people, undocumented
like,
people can be arrested for almost anything.
Right, I was gonna
and
say.
The bar for criminal offense includes prioritizing people who have abused public benefits, which most undocumented people have had to some degree because you know, if you don't have health insurance and you have to go to the hospital, you're probably abusing public benefits to some degree. Misrepresented themselves, that's a pretty common thing to have to do as an undocumented person. Or in the judgment of an immigration officer otherwise posed a risk to public safety or national security.
So that's anything.
There's no definition included with that. That leaves wide latitude to basically just like spitting on someone.
You're being here.
Exactly.
Like,
so basically, the people that we're prioritizing now, instead of being like hardened criminals, are like anyone who's had to you know, skirt the law a little to get by.
Right, exactly.
But has not in any way harmed anyone. Yeah.
But it's like, you know, criminal records. Like, I mean, you know, I have a ton of friends who have criminal records because they were arrested for, you know, underage drinking in college. You
exactly.
know, it's sort of like,
well, and
it's
this, like, the one thing that for undocumented people is included, and I think is the sort of cruelest of all of these, is that it includes driving without a license.
Right.
And you can't get a license in most states if you're undocumented. Yeah. And so it's like, it's all sort of like, you know, it's all a catch-22.
Yeah.
It's all like, by being here, you've committed a crime because you're not here legally.
Right.
So anything that this basically says now, that we can now interpret that to mean that you are a criminal and deny you due process because they are also allowed to detain or deport people who have been charged with a crime but not convicted.
Yeah.
Or people, you know, anyone who's in a situation where they haven't actually been convicted of something but have been suspected of something, essentially. So we're not even, you know, we're not even offering due process. And that includes to some people who are here legally.
Yeah.
Green card holders and stuff.
The DHS says they don't have the resources to go into communities and start rounding people up because a lot of people have been, like, thinking
that this was going to
lead to raids. But interestingly,
there's been raids here, though.
There have been raids. And also, like, if they don't have the resources now, they're about to get the resources.
They're going to hire 10,000
new immigration officers.
Of course.
By the way, wasn't there a federal freeze on hiring other than military?
Except for these 10,000 immigration officers. That was one of the exceptions.
Oh, it really was?
Yeah, it really was.
I thought it was only non-military.
Yeah. No, they included new immigration officers, 10,000 new immigration officers.
That's a lot of immigration officers, guys, by the way.
It's too many.
It's too many.
And there's, because of all of this stepped up security, there's been like so many weird things that have happened. Like there was one plane from San Francisco where people's IDs were checked on their way out of the plane.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I believe Muhammad Ali's son was detained.
Yep.
And they asked him if his mother got off because she had a picture with Muhammad Ali. They asked him if he was Muslim and he said yes.
Do you have a picture with your father?
But he just didn't have a picture with his father. But it's like, also who hasn't fucking heard of Muhammad Ali? Like his name is Muhammad Ali Jr. It wasn't like his name was like something fantastical.
Right.
And he was an American citizen born in the United States with an American passport. So who the fuck cares what his religion is?
Right.
Especially since his father is a civil rights icon. That's a pretty low bar.
Yeah.
In any case, the DHS memo also can expand expedited removal, which really does deprive people of due process because, and Obama had limited that to, and you know, he loved a good deportation, but he had limited that to people encountered within 100 miles of a border within 14 days of their entry.
Yeah.
And now they can use that with anyone, which basically means they can deport someone without a hearing or further review. They said they're going to limit it to they said they're going to limit parole to only special cases where after careful consideration it's needed because urgent humanitarian reasons or significant public benefit. But if you're in an expedited removal, you don't get that careful hearing. So there's no way to, that's another catch 22. Because where does this careful consideration come into play? Also, on an absurd note, the president in these executive orders is directing all the, we've talked about this briefly, but is directing agencies to identify how much aid
they
give to Mexico because he's going to try to use it to build the wall.
Yeah. It's not enough to build the wall, guys, by the
way. I love it.
$30 billion,
so we're
not giving them that much money.
Offers no proof, but says it has identified the money to begin constructing the wall.
Okay.
Like,
I also believe, doesn't this allow the DHS agents to deport people back to Mexico that aren't from Mexico?
Well, yes. And Mexico, because it allows them to deport people back to the country they came from, not the country they are actually from.
Right, exactly.
And Mexico was like, we're not taking non-Mexicans.
Right.
Like, Mexicans
can come back
here. Because
technically they would
have
come from Mexico
because they had to pass through Mexico. Exactly.
Like, if you came from Colombia, you came from Mexico.
Right, but Mexico was like, we're not taking fucking Hondurans. They're not like, we'll take Mexicans because we're Mexico. So Mexico has refused to accept any non-Mexicans under this arrangement.
On a side note.
But while we're talking about bigotry and anger.
Yeah, exactly. Trump finally decided that he's against anti-Semitism.
It was a lot of work.
He only said that he was against anti-Semitism. Right. He hasn't really acted in a way that would show that he is against anti-Semitism. But he finally got around to it this week because he'd spent a couple weeks.
Ignoring, sort of like ignoring a huge uptick in anti-Semitic hate crimes.
Right, because he'd been ignoring that. Last week at his press conference, he was asked about it, and he said, quote, "I'm the least anti-Semitic person that you've ever seen in your life." And then he also noted his daughter Ivanka and Jared Kushner are
Jewish. I have
a
black friend.
But he, you know, he also took all that flack when he, you know, on the Holocaust Memorial Day.
Where he didn't mention Jewish people.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So he finally...
Well, and this is after... There was, like, a huge, like... Like demolishing, or not demolishing, but there was a destruction of a historic Jewish cemetery.
Right.
And
yes.
The Muslim community
raised money to
Yeah, they raised a ton of money to fix it. And then a bunch of people, including the Muslim community and the Jewish community and other random people, went to go fix it together. And there was like a nice photo op, and it was like a nice thing. And Mike Pence went and visited it. And they gave him a yarmulke with his name on it. I was like, don't do that.
Right.
But in any case, the Anne Frank Center was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
They said, the president's sudden acknowledgement of anti-Semitism is a band-aid on the cancer of anti-Semitism that has infected his own administration. His statement today is a pathetic asterisk of condensation after weeks in which...
Condescension.
God damn it. After weeks in which he and his staff have committed grotesque acts and omissions reflecting anti-Semitism, yet day after day have refused to apologize and correct the record. Make no mistake, the anti-Semitism coming out of this administration is the worst we have ever seen from any administration.
Ooh, buddy. Anne Frank Center. Going in.
They were not sorry.
No.
They shouldn't be.
No, I was just about to say. They're not sorry. They're not wrong.
They're openly anti-Semitic in this administration. And he keeps bringing up fucking Ivanka as it, that it's like when you say, oh, no, I'm not racist.
Friend.
I have a gay friend. I have a black friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's not enough.
No, it's not.
You can't just have a Jewish friend and call it a day.
Yeah. Quick, hilarious story about...
While we're talking about immigration. Story.
About immigration, yes. Is that there was a story that like got a lot of press in the right-wing press world because actually the head of the Texas Commissioner of Agriculture and this Donald Trump ally, Sid Miller, talked about it and they were really pushing it. There was a story about how a Texas hunting guide and the client that he was with, both they were found, they called the police, and they had both been shot.
Right.
And everybody had their story straight when the police got there.
Illegal immigrants.
They had seen illegal immigrants on
the
ranch earlier in the day.
The papers of the people that shot them.
Illegal immigrants shot them.
Very elaborate story that they cooked up together.
Exactly. So turns out, as of last week, investigators and now actually a grand jury have determined that, guess what happened? You would be able to guess.
Because you've met Dick Cheney.
Right, exactly. They shot each other.
Yeah. It's an accidental shooting of both of them.
That's what happens when two people are
hanging out with each other hunting.
And both of them have guns.
Yeah. So they might shoot each other. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
This is, well, I feel like this is, because I've been reading the Drudge Report religiously-ish.
Yeah.
Because Brent.
I mean, I'm not trying to get Drudge more clicks,
no,
but also
no.
like, it's a
it's
treasure
fast.
Trove
It's a treasure
of
trove
of
ridiculousness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a story in there the other week about how liberals were up in arms because a toy horse had been forced to sit at a children's like high chair. And I was like,
what?
It was right under a story about illegal immigrants coming and like murdering somebody.
He,
I was like,
they're geniuses at coupling stories together.
Yes. All the couplings.
Yeah.
But all the headlines are like every instance of voter fraud and an undocumented person leaving their house that has occurred during the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So they have like 1,000 headlines. Because I was like, who is driving this illegal voting story?
Right.
And then I was like, oh, the Drudge Report
the
is exclusively reporting on it. But I feel like this is one of those stories that they would have picked up and then never reported the resolution, which is that... Obviously.
Oh, no. No, they did not report the grand jury investigation.
No. Obviously,
I can guarantee.
These two men shot each other. Because also, how did they know that the people that shot them were undocumented otherwise?
Exactly. This is a story that I am actually still trying to process.
It's hard.
The first part of the story I'm not trying to process. Because the first part is that on Wednesday, Trump rescinded protections for transgender students that had allowed them to use the bathrooms corresponding with their gender
identity.
Of course
he did. Remember when he didn't care about transgender bathroom issues?
No.
Remember when he was specifically asked about that when that North Carolina law was happening?
He didn't care.
And he was like, I don't care. Use whatever bathroom you want.
I know.
Remember that?
Yeah. Also,
I do too.
Also, whenever we talk about transgender bathroom issues, I love that it always brings up the fact that we can, again, share the link about how more Republicans have been arrested doing shenanigans in bathrooms than transgender people have.
Yeah.
So that's important to remember as context for this, by the way. But anyway, so it's not shocking, even though Trump said that he was going to not care about this, because, like, hello, we all knew he was going to care about this. But for this to be able to go through, for him to rescind this, it's basically a legal issue, and it's also, like, it's an education issue.
Right.
So he had to have both the Justice Department and the Education Department on board with this.
Yeah.
We now, those two departments are led by Jeff Sessions now and Betsy DeVos now, right. Both terrible people.
Yes.
Betsy DeVos is a person who has said that she wants, like, you know, the will of God to be, like, included right. in our schools man. Or what. So she's, like, a total... And we also know that she's an idiot.
Right.
So that's what makes the second part of the story so confusing.
It's fascinating.
Because she...
So Jeff Sessions signs this.
Jeff
no
Sessions
problem.
Is, like...
He'll discriminate
he
against anyone. He's
yeah,
equal
he
opportunity
right,
discrimination
exactly. I mean, we know he's
artist.
A racist. So, like,
right.
obviously, he doesn't,
he hates
like,
transgender people, too.
People.
That's, yeah.
But Betsy DeVos did not want to do this.
Yeah.
At all. Like, was stood firmly against Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions was getting nowhere with her.
Yeah.
Had to go to Trump, who basically gave her an ultimatum and was like, you can go along with this or you can resign. And so she's still spineless. I don't want to say too many nice things about Betsy DeVos because she didn't resign. She was like, oh yeah, sure. Let's just hate the transgenders.
Yeah.
I'll move on with my life. Fine.
Right.
So she went along with it, but she did release a statement that I still can't get my head around. She said, in it, she said she considered it a, quote, moral obligation to every school in America to protect all students from discrimination, bullying, and harassment. And she said that she had directed the Education Department's Office for Civil Rights to investigate all claims of such treatment against those who are the most vulnerable in our schools.
Remember when she didn't think that schools should have to accommodate disabled students?
I know.
Just a few weeks ago.
Maybe she can be taught things.
It's weird. Like, I feel like there's going to, like, this, because these people are so unqualified,
right.
There's going to be some real wild card
right,
things
that
happen.
Right, because they don't know what
they're
are.
They're learning the
they
issue
know,
as they go. It's
know,
like when,
exactly.
like, Ben Carson might be a terrible HUD head. He might be great because he might finally find out what HUD does once he becomes that, you know,
right,
like,
right.
Like.
He might realize that HUD is doing good things and then really want to be a part of that.
Right, like, right. like I feel like maybe she finally read up on the education department
right.
and was like, oh
right.
Okay, I see. They're supposed to protect students from.
Rick Perry might read up on the energy department.
Yeah, I mean
well, who knows?
Right, he might find out it should exist.
Right, exactly.
But I mean, I feel like there is a certain amount of sort of like line towing and, you know, repeating old wisdom that a lot of these people have done who are against the department they lead.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of them probably don't have a great sense of what the day-to-day work of these departments is. I mean, I know for sure they don't because they have no idea. They have no experience in government.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to find out what they learn in the process. I'm not interested to find out what happens to our schools or our, you know,
I mean,
civil
if Betsy
rights,
DeVos
but...
learns that we shouldn't be, you know, discriminating against transgender kids in our schools, then great. Like,
I mean, that's a lesson for her. Maybe
her
she'll find out what public schools are. She'd probably never been to one.
I know. Maybe we should. Maybe
she didn't send her kids to them.
Maybe protesters should actually let her into one.
Right, exactly. She'll find out that public schools are doing the work of educating our society.
Exactly. Yeah. Here's one that's real rich, by the way.
Politico did a poll.
Right. Yes. And they've been doing this poll almost every month for a while.
Yeah.
Basically trying to figure out what registered voters think about Obamacare.
Yes.
And it's as we know, Obamacare has always been underwater when you poll whether you like or dislike, if you only frame it as Obamacare or even only frame it as the Affordable Care Act, even though
it's more popular if you frame it as the Affordable Care Act.
And a lot of people don't know that they're the same thing,
right.
Which is another disturbing thing that we've learned of late.
Right.
But so it has, Obamacare itself has always been underwater. Now, if you ask people whether you think that people with pre-existing conditions should be able to get health care, like that's like 100%
that
of people
Obamacare
think that,
does
right,
pull amazing.
Pull really well, right.
Right.
So the last time this poll was done, which was January, which... if you are a person who knows the calendar, was just last month,
right.
41% of people approved of Obamacare and 52% disapproved of it. It was so that's pretty underwater. That's 11 percentage points underwater. Guess what? This month, it was 45-45.
Mm-hmm.
And most people seem to think that that's probably because now the people who are on it are like,
know that they're
oh,
on
shit.
It and might lose it.
Yes.
But also, when we say disapprove, we're not just talking about people who want to scrap the law and have nothing.
Yes.
We're talking about people who want to
make
scrap the
better,
law. Make it better.
Have single
expand
payer.
Expand the law. Single payer. Exactly.
Right.
We're talking about all the reasons you might approve of Obamacare. And remember, this was a Heritage Foundation plan. It's a Republican idea. There are a lot of people on the left who are very unhappy with it as well.
Yeah.
So, and those people are not hoping that we will get rid of healthcare.
Right.
They're hoping we'll expand it.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, Congress is obviously since, you know, since the Republicans are now in power, you know, when they were the minority party, they passed, or when they didn't have the presidency, they passed, you know, repealing Obamacare 100 billion times.
Right.
But now they're in power, we know that they're having trouble figuring out what they're going to do. Did you see last week John Boehner was like, they're never going to repeal that? Yeah. So, and there were some additional numbers in this poll that I feel like prove why it is confusing for them as to what to do. Because when asked whether people wanted to repeal it, or, you know, when
keep
they gave them a dish or keep it in place, the results were interesting. 12% of people wanted to keep the law in place as is.
Sure.
24% wanted to repeal it entirely. But then 27 people. Yeah.
That's just one classroom full of people.
They could have just asked 100 people.
Right.
I don't know. 27% want to repeal parts of the law, but not all of it. And then 26% of people want to expand the existing law. So it's a real conundrum there.
It's a conundrum.
It's basically like, you know, what the hell? If I'm in Congress looking at that, I'm like, oh boy.
Exactly. Like, because if only a quarter of people want to repeal it entirely, then you're working with a real mixed bag, because half of the other people want to take away some of it and the other half want to have more of it.
Right. And I guarantee you that 27% who want to repeal parts of the law, I would guess most of that 27% are people who just want to
repeal the mandate.
Repeal the mandate.
But you can't have the rest of the law without the mandate.
And I was going to say, most of that same 27% also don't realize why you have to have the mandate.
Exactly.
Because they're idiot people.
Right. Yeah, they're not paying attention.
No.
Yeah. But repealing part of Obamacare has always been a fraught situation, because really you can't repeal the least popular part of it is the mandate.
Right. As soon as
you can't repeal the mandate without repealing everything else. The whole thing crumbles when the mandate's gone.
Yeah.
So it's... I think the New York Times did an article where they were sort of like, Republicans don't know what to do and probably won't do anything.
Because, and honestly, I can't...
Their ridiculous plans are not getting anywhere with people.
No.
No one is being fooled by this HSA talk.
Well, and the thing that you have been hearing a lot of people, a lot of Republicans talk about, and this was my favorite moment from the Bernie Sanders, Ted Cruz debate that they did, on CNN, which if you didn't watch it was pretty interesting. But they were talking about healthcare, and you're hearing a lot of Republicans do this, where they want to make sure people have access to healthcare.
Yeah.
That's their new thing. They just want to make sure that, like, there is healthcare that people can buy, which is basically always what we've had. Like, we want
to
people to have
first
access.
Class flights to Dubai.
Yes, exactly. And that's what Bernie Sanders said. Bernie
I
Sanders
can't
said,
get one.
Right. The person who asked the question, Bernie Sanders said to them, he goes, you have access to buy one of Donald Trump's mansions.
Right.
Like, but you cannot.
You have access to buy the Trump organization.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
We all have basic access to everything. It's one of the great parts about living in America. You can't afford all of them.
No. And that's not...
And healthcare is one of the things that you often can't afford.
If we're pretending that access just means the right to buy instead of the ability to buy, then we are lying to everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. Here's some good news.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, there was a Maryland law that passed that said that military grade guns were illegal, basically like for you to
own. For personal use.
For personal use. Yeah, exactly. So there was that.
Of course, a million court battles.
Right, a million court battles. And this week, the federal appeals court heard the case, and they decided with Maryland.
Yeah.
So... Good work.
The Maryland,
and federal
ban stands as of now.
Yeah.
And no one's really sure also. So there's a sort of question about whether the Supreme Court will take this up, because there was a ruling that limited the Second Amendment's, quote, core protections to the ownership of handguns for self-defense within the home.
Yeah.
That was a recent decision by the Roberts Court.
And the Roberts, and they have since... They decided that they have been reluctant to hear more cases on this.
And this federal appeals court used that ruling as precedent to make this ruling, but they don't want to hear, they don't want to hear more, they don't want to have to clarify further.
No, exactly. Like, they already last year did not hear a case that people wanted to bring in front of them in regards to a very, very similar law that was passed in Connecticut after Sandy Hook. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it seems like this law is probably going to stand, because it doesn't seem like the Supreme Court, at least of late, has had any interest in like rehearing this. They already
and
did
I wonder
once.
If we start to see these laws pop up in some other states as if they do stand.
Yeah. State politics news. Yes. So this was the story that I referenced earlier that gives me some hope, because there was a race that you would sort of probably under normal circumstances not necessarily care about. There was, it was a state Senate race in Delaware. It was a special election, and it was going to swing the state Senate one way or the other.
The person who held the seat was elected lieutenant governor last year, and so it's been vacant since November.
Right. So there was a Democrat in the race, Stephanie Hansen, and she blew out the Republican, John Marino. And then there was also...
But they brought in big guns for this. Joe Biden got involved?
Yes. Well, and that's...
They raised $1 million.
Right. And not only did Joe Biden get involved, because like Joe Biden, I mean, certainly I love Joe Biden as a person who was like a great vice president. I feel like that was a job that was like tailor made for him. He also sort of like endorsed Tom Perez recently. Right. I feel
and
like
he's been up to shenanigans.
He doesn't always get it. Obviously part of the establishment. Yeah. I like him, but like, you know.
Exactly.
But the thing that sort of like, first off, the Republican, I think, or the Democrat who had last won this had only won by like 2 or 3%.
It was the Democrat. Sorry, the seat Democrat, had been Democratic, but it had been steadily moving towards.
Yes.
So this is, the Delaware State House has been Democratic, or the Delaware State Senate has been Democratic for 40 years.
Yes.
This left it very open to the fact that to going Republican for the first time in a long time. And they were very concerned because Bethany Hallong, who had held the seat, won it by a razor thin margin last time.
The other thing that, first off, Tom Perez in his interview was talking about this. Mm-hmm. The DNC had been pretty active in this race, which is great because we sort of like, you know, would often contend that like these
they're
are
not
the
active enough in small
that,
races.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And not only was the DNC active in this race, they worked, I was reading an article about this, they worked fairly closely in organizing in this race with our revolution.
That's what should be happening.
Yes. And, right, exactly. So like I am kind of feeling like that gave me like a little hope. Yeah. And like, and this should prove like the results here, like the proof is in the pudding here. So like, you know, I think that they, and this is also like not the type of race that Democrats would often be very good at winning.
Yeah.
Because we do bad in off years. We do bad in sort of like,
when people don't show up, nobody votes.
When people don't get the chance to vote for president, Democrats often just sort of like don't bother.
Yeah.
So like this for me was like, okay, great. Even though it's just a Delaware state Senate race. Right. Like I just,
that was already
like,
Democratic.
Right. That was already Democratic. I still felt really good in reading about all the things.
Yeah.
About this
hearing
race.
About, hearing about our revolution and the Democrats cooperating.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I think that there is a possibility that we actually build a very strong organization if there is, if this tone of sort of condescension leaves the hall. You know, that's the thing that I think, you know, that's why I'm so upset about this race. That's why I'm so sort of hopeless. And I think that if it does, there is suddenly a huge new base of voters that are an opportunity for Democrats to reach. I just think they're not trying to reach them
with
this symbolism.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's something that they sort of instinctively, you know, start to understand. But that's why I want the, postmortem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In another exciting state level twist,
You know,
Kansas has been having budget trouble for years because Sam Brownback cut all of the taxes in the world and then had to start cutting services because he couldn't afford anything because the state's been in a massive deficit since.
Yeah. He ended all of the ways that the state
could make money.
Could make money and then seemed shocked
when
he had
budget
to cut
shortfalls.
Public education because they didn't have any money.
He's not a great mathematician.
He's not a math person. No.
But so things have gotten so bad there that their Republican-led House had to vote to raise taxes.
Yes.
Because finally I mean, when things get that bad, even Republicans have to be like, oh no, our state
we need
won't
some
function.
More money. Yeah, exactly. So Brownback, being the asshole that he is, vetoed it.
And they overrode it 85 to 40.
Yeah, and his own party was like, you know what?
Not this time, buddy.
Buzz off.
Well, you know what?
We have to fund this place.
He has the lowest approval rating of any governor currently sitting. He's 26%. So they were probably like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Don't take us down with you.
Yeah. So good for them.
Because the winds have changed in Kansas a bit because of these budget shortfalls.
Yeah,
they had to cut higher education.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
that last governor's race was going to be close. And then there were a lot of Democrats who were hopeful that they might win
but they ran a nobody. That was a classic Democratic move. We don't like that. We have not been winning these things. We haven't been winning easy races.
I was gonna say, we're not so far away from having a Republican governor or a Democratic governor in Kansas. I mean, Kathleen Sebelius was the governor of Kansas.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's not like they've never heard of Democrats.
Right.
There.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like why we couldn't win against the most unpopular governor in the currently sitting.
Yeah, it's upsetting.
Is upsetting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
In the continuing drama of Mayo Yiannopoulos, hopefully this is the last time we ever have to mention him.
Let's hope.
His fans have come up with some interesting conspiracy theories about his downfall that we just wanted to mention briefly because they're hilarious.
Yeah, of course they have, by the way.
Mike Cernovich, who is one of the main Pizzagate conspiracy theorists, believes that that Yiannopoulos is the victim of a, quote, deep state operation.
Ooh.
That's a conspiracy theory community term for, like, intel agencies and the government, basically. Yeah. He said deep state operatives, quote, make the new members molest children and record it. That accomplishes two things.
Oh.
One, it gives them blackmail material on everybody for the rest of their lives. But even bigger, they know that if you harm a child, that you will do anything for them.
Oh.
So he claims that Yiannopoulos was getting too big for his britches for them. And they wanted to shut things down before the whole cover got blown off of their secret operation.
Mm, interesting.
Alex Jones came in to defend that theory, as you would if you were Alex Jones and you had no thoughts in your head.
Yeah.
He posted
a video, or too many.
He has a lot of thoughts. That's true. He posted a video called Milo is a victim of sexual abuse, does not promote pedophilia, and went on at length saying that Yiannopoulos was scrambled by his molestation as a teen and that he has Stockholm syndrome and that's why he turned gay and made him sympathetic to his abusers.
Ooh.
And then he said he's a victim of a, quote, witch hunt by PC journalists, Hollywood pedophiles, and the Republican Party.
Hollywood pedophiles.
Hollywood pedophiles, PC journalists, and the Republican Party.
Yeah. Also, related Alex Jones news, I don't know if you saw this, but it's hilarious, because there is this season of Homeland, which I watch religiously. Mm. I love that show. There's an Alex Jones-esque
character
who's, like, obviously insane, because Alex Jones is insane. And Alex Jones himself is not happy about this. He has been saying that, like, it's a conspiracy to, like, make him look like an insane person.
No conspiracy needed.
No conspiracy needed. Yes, exactly.
He's accomplishing it all on his own.
Yeah. So he's probably right that they modeled it after him.
He's a great character for television,
life. They made the person look crazy because the person that they are modeling it after
looks
is
crazy.
Also a crazy person.
Yeah,
exactly. So,
He has very little self-awareness.
Yeah,
it's sort of shocking.
And
in final news,
oh boy,
if the Democrats can't save us from the world as it currently is, maybe witches can.
Yeah, this already happened. This happened on Friday, so we'll see
what the results
goes here. But witches of the world,
are spells like more of a long game or a short term?
Well, see, this
game
wasn't
type thing.
So, so first off, there was like a mass binding spell. So it's not really, it's not a spell that, a binding spell, it doesn't generate like potential negative things. It basically is just sort of like, it will remove power from him.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, it's like binding his hands from doing anything.
Thank you for clarifying this important witchcraft terminology.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I knew it already.
Well, obviously. Yeah.
I didn't have to look it up.
No, never. Yeah. You would never. You know everything about witchcraft.
Yeah.
But so the article that we got this from says that, in other words, this is not the equivalent of magically punching a Nazi. Rather, it is ripping the bullhorn from his hands, smashing his phone so he can't tweet, tying him up, and throwing him into a dark basement where he can't hurt anyone.
What's unfortunate about this is because, like, you know, obviously I will lean on any hope that I can have. And when I first read this story, I was like,
finally,
witches
are in.
Like, I mean, you know, if every witch worldwide wants to, you know, summon their powers, then, I mean, God bless them.
Yeah.
We're for it. But Trump has beaten the witches before.
Yeah.
He's
a special kind of evil.
He really is. Yeah. It's not his first run in with the witches, because in September, a group of witches in Brooklyn hexed him, put a hex on him. And a group in Vermont called Vermont Feminists Against Trump, which apparently
it's the most aptly named witch group I've ever heard.
Right, exactly. Also, hexed him in October, and those were
unsuccessful
attempts to make him not
win. Well, maybe those weren't binding
the
spells; they were hexes.
Yeah, they were hexes. Maybe he's
impervious to hexes, but not impervious. Yeah. Well, hopefully, whatever it takes, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
If whatever wacky belief system you have wants to be summoned to take Trump down, I'm for it.
Yep. Agreed.
You believe whatever you need to believe to make this all stop.
Yep, exactly.
Because I'm tired.
Yes.
In any case, that's the news this week.
There it is.
Probably not all of it. Nobody knows where all of the news is anymore. The Oscars are tonight.
We're going to go watch the Oscars.
So congratulations
to La La Land for winning all of the awards. We haven't seen the Oscars yet because they start in an hour and a half.
But we're in Hollywood. We know exactly what's going on here.
Exactly.
Hollywood loves a movie about Hollywood.
They sure do. And you know what? So do I.
I love
that movie. It's my favorite movie.
I haven't.
I'm not mad either. I know there are a lot of people who are
mad.
All right, La La Land, like, slow your roll. I'm like, give it everything.
Like, you're a La La Land apologist.
Yes, big time.
I feel like I am not qualified to say, as I have seen La La Land because I saw like an early cut of it like months ago.
Interesting.
But I have not seen Moonlight, which I feel like is one of the contenders.
Moonlight. So great.
I feel like I haven't seen a lot of the movies I was supposed to have seen because I can't currently handle depressing entertainment.
Well, that's the thing. I'm not seeing Manchester by the Sea.
I have it
I'm not
right now. I have a screener of it. Not going to watch it.
You can't watch it.
No.
It's not meant to be watched.
The idea of it makes me sad. Yeah, and so exactly. I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, I'm not going to see Hacksaw Ridge. I spent an embarrassing amount of time
trying to work out a tech issue so that I could watch Edge of 17 last night.
Oh boy.
Didn't even succeed.
Oh, isn't that with what's her dick?
Haley person yeah. plant?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steinfeld.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like, that's where I am right now. Yeah. I'm watching dumb teen movies. Yeah, I can't watch anything else. Yeah. If you're not a sitcom with a quirky plot that has nothing to do with politics or Veep. Or or a quirky sitcom with everything to do with politics, or a dumb teen movie. I'm like not in at the moment.
Yeah, fair enough.
I try. Yeah, you know, whatever. In any case, that's the news this week.
Talk to you next week.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, hope the witch's spell works.
Fingers crossed, everybody. Yeah, right. Okay, bye.